This is OTB AM.
Can Cork out Kerry again? Here I am asking two Kerry men. I'm stupid. I mean, it's the stupidest question I've ever asked in my life. You're both going to be, oh, yeah, of course.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Weekdays from 7.30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24-7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Jenny Murphy is with us this morning. Jenny, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, how are you?
Before we talk about Ireland trying to win the championship with a bonus point try in Paris at the weekend, bonus point victory, we should talk about the fact that the French Federation were very generous and offered to come over to Ireland because of the French COVID restrictions. And it looked like that game was going to go ahead for the women at the weekend. But now that too has been postponed because of the COVID outbreak in the French squad. This is a difficult scenario that rugby finds itself in at the moment.
Yeah, I think sometimes, and I know I've taken it for granted before, but when live sports got back up and running, you kind of were like, okay, thank God, normalcy. But we're very much skating on thin ice, and one positive test and it kind of all comes crumbling down. It was an extremely sane gesture by the French to offer to give away home advantage to come play the women's team here, and unfortunately it's not worked out. I know that the Irish girls are extremely disappointed as well. You know, that would have been their second game since February, and so they're kind of chomping at the bit and really want to impose their game. And Italy was just kind of not a warm-up, but they were putting their process in place, and France was definitely going to give them a much tougher challenge. So to kind of leave that all hanging, we don't know what's going to happen now, but hopefully they'll get another few games before World Cup qualifiers kicks off in December.
Yeah, because even that whole process is a little bit up in the air at the moment in terms of World Cup qualification.
Yeah, it's very different, the needs of the women's game and the men's, and we can't have a bubble in the women's game because it's still amateur, so girls still need to work, they still, you know, need to go home. And so we have to find a different way to try and balance that out. Obviously with the lockdown in Ireland now, it's a lot easier to kind of contain, and the girls are still able to train away in the national centre, which is fantastic. But yeah, I'm really hoping that these qualifiers go ahead, but the back of my mind, there's still a strong possibility that this might not happen this year.
And as far as I know, like we would be favoured to go through, even if the qualifiers do happen, that this is actually, we're at a level that are slightly above the teams we're against?
It's quite close. I don't think that was Italy's. Italy definitely have more in the bag than what they played last weekend. So do Ireland. Scotland had a fantastic performance and a result against an extremely strong, pretty much semi-professional France side. With a 13-point draw, so it's not going to be easy. And then the lack of game time as well across the board will be tough on teams. So it's a little more. I think lockdown has worked in Ireland's advantage. Scotland were starting to play some really lovely football at the start of the Six Nations, and then you still got to, like, take into consideration the likes of Spain as well, who they're not favourites to qualify, but if you get drawn in that group, it's still a tough game to kind of manage, and you have to manage your team as well. So we're favourites, but only slightly.
Let's turn our attention to the men's game this weekend then. The unusual scenario of knowing the team days out, it's like, and hasn't been leaked to the papers first, and there hasn't been all this subterfuge around it. The Andy Farrell era is different in little subtle ways, which is interesting to see. And certainly the analysis so far is that the team is playing in a slightly subtly different way. Peter Mahoney's offload was one example. The number of times we box kicked last week is being cited as the other example. Nothing like victories to give people comfort. So all the talk about a bonus point, I think, is probably a little bit silly from Ireland's perspective. The only thing we should really care about is trying to win this game, right?
Yeah. Like, France away from home, isn't it? It's an extremely tough place to go with or without crowds. I think the only time, we've only beaten France away from home by 2 points once in the professional era. So I know we're not focused on that points difference at the moment, but I think we'll be extremely satisfied with the win. And considering, you know, the start of our Six Nations earlier in the year, there was a few people that were very much, you know, quite negative towards Farrell and what he was about to do. But I think the game has opened up a little bit. You can see what they're trying to do. So go to France, get a win, get a performance. And like, we don't have to wait until, you know, November tests during the Six Nations. We've got, like, it's right around the corner as well. So it's kind of nearly like a sevens game in a way that you can redeem yourself, or you can fix what you kind of missed in the Six Nations in a short space of time, rather than have to wait to get another few games under your belt with the team.
And that allows for a far greater degree of risk as well, doesn't it?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
It allows for a greater degree of risk because, as you say, there is going to be plenty of opportunity for redemption with all these games mashed together so quickly over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, we can definitely, like, there is obviously risk both in terms of, you know, injury and stuff as well, but we can play, and we are playing, a little bit looser. That's not to say it's not very much controlled. It just gives the players a little bit more freedom to have a look up. So you can clearly see a system, the positions that they want to play. So it's looking like a 3-2-2-1 system. But then players know, like, okay, I need to get to this part of the pitch and I need to find my buddy or my other buddy. And then within that system, okay, we'll have a look up and we'll play within that. And maybe in the Schmidt era, it was a little bit different and players knew exactly where they needed to go at all times. And here it's kind of, there's a little bit more onus on, well, they can decide themselves. And key point was that Hugo Keenan's try, Henshaw came on and the ball just flashed across the left and a really nice pass atop the Italian defence, and Keenan was over. So it's not a bad debut from him, but it's really nice to see the lads being able to play that kind of rugby. It's more fun to play as well. So, you know, that's often kind of goes unsaid, but playing with fun, it's a bit more crack. And I think anyway that you enjoy the game more when it's, you can put your own stamp on it.
Is there a chance that was just a game plan for Italy, Jenny, and that when we actually are faced with the French at the weekend, there will be a little bit more pragmatism involved, a lot more pragmatism involved potentially?
Yeah, I would imagine so. Like, you consider the threats that France have, you can't kick a ball loose. One of the things that I was most impressed with France was just their transitional ball from counter-attack. And they're absolutely lethal. So you don't want to just send a kick down and kind of hope for the best. It's all about being smart and aggressive and keep the ball as well. Like, France turned over Welsh ball 12 times in that game, and I can't see Andy Farrell's team allowing that to happen. So ball retention, be smart. I'd love to see another Peter Romani offload. That was unbelievable, but we won't be risking that early in the game, but we'll see what happens.
Look, we all, you know, we exist in a perpetual now, and especially at the moment, there's a massive focus on every single match and every single moment of every match. That's just the way life is. With a new coach like this, because he was part of the old coaching ticket, there was an assumption that it was a continuity decision, and clearly from the IRFE's perspective it was. But he has to be thinking, I want to do something different from what happened before, not just because he's his own man, but also because that didn't work. Like, it was great for a while, but everybody worked out what we were doing and then it stopped working. So how quickly do you expect there will actually be the full imprint of what Andy Farrell's team is trying to do and his philosophy is fully there for everybody? Is it next year's Six Nations before we can finally say, right, you've had enough time, particularly in this extended autumn window, or should it actually be now, given that, you know, he has been around the squad so long, he knows the skill sets?
I think it's slightly, probably a little bit more of a gradual thing because of the limited time that they've had together with COVID. But like, one of the reasons why I think Andy Farrell is at a massive advantage than other players is he can see, or he saw what Schmidt was imposing. And as a coach, you have your own philosophies and ways that you like to manage things. So you pay attention a lot more, and you can sit back and you can draw a lot from the things that worked well under Joe. But also, I feel that Farrell seems to be a big man manager, and he gets an awful lot out of his players. Not that Schmidt didn't, it's just a different way of operating. So when you're in, you know, your meetings or your team management, in the back of your head, you're kind of like, okay, maybe this is what I'll probably do differently. And you're constantly reflecting all the time. So when he did come into the squad, you could see changes early on. And it's starting to, I'd imagine by the Six Nations, we will have a very clear footprint of this is what Farrell's team is about. But again, it's about kind of navigating and seeing how, like, as a coach as well, you need to see your players play matches in order for you to kind of shift and change. But like, yeah, I think early Six Nations, we're going to see something. And we'll see it building. It's not going to be like this time next week, oh, boom, Andy Farrell, this is what he likes to implement in his game. I think it's, yeah, Six Nations will have a clear indicator of this is what this team's about.
Particularly after the Saracens game and the way that, pardon me, the way that they just completely dominated Leinster in the exact same manner that England had dominated Ireland the last three times we'd played them. Stuart Barnes was on and he was talking about how when you look through the Leinster team, when you look through the Ireland team, there aren't that many world-class talents in the team as it stands right now. And not that many players who you would pick in the starting Lions side if you were picking the Lions team tomorrow. There's probably a few debates, and obviously there's loads of time for players to play their way back into form. But it does beg the question, was that our time? Was 2018 our moment where we had our players playing really well? Do we have enough world-class players? It's the age-old kind of Irish sports question. Are we actually as good as we think we are?
Listen, I think we're pretty great. So, you know, no, I think that, like, it's in terms of world-class players and do we have them? I do think we do. But again, it's sometimes not about having, you know, these Callum Clarks or these constant world players. You want the team, like, take for example Exeter Chiefs. They don't have, or you could argue that they don't have, you know, unbelievable Mario Atogis or whatever on the team, but the team wins matches. So like, we don't necessarily need that. You need like a few strong leaders on the pitch. You need someone that's smart and has the ability to control the game, you know, quick rook ball, accurate and aggressive rugby, and you can do a job. So I don't think we need these five big talismans that can get us over the line. It's smart gameplay and, you know, really good team. Like Japan, a prime example of that. They don't have world-class players, but they played some unbelievable rugby in the World Cup. They're so gelled as a team. They're extremely organized, and everyone knew the job that they had to do in order to get across the gain line and score some really nice tries, play some really nice rugby. But again, it was smart, and they played with the talents that they had. Ireland have that and more. They have world-class players, and they're smart. I think it's all about just utilizing that to the best of their ability. Like, we have, you know, some really upcoming talent. Like, our back rows at the moment are, you've got your pick of who could slot in and out and do a fantastic job. It's about selecting those players, horses for courses. I know that's like such a cliche thing to say, but I think Ireland, we're building. The fact we've got a little bit of time with Farrell in order to cement that again, I do think this team can do very well in the future.
Well, the horses for courses thing is actually quite interesting, because perhaps we're too attached to this idea of having a starting back row and that it's immovable and that there will be a three there that we always go to. But as you say there, perhaps the Italy back row that performs above expectations is not the same back row that should take to the field against France, assuming everybody is fit.
Yeah, like you pick, not only do you pick like what you want to get out of the game, but you also take into consideration your opposition as well. Like, even how Eddie Jones has selected his team, for, like, Sam Simmons is out. He's not even called into camp. He's had an unbelievable tournament, both in the Premiership and in the Champions Cup with Exeter, and he's not getting called, and there was outrage. But then you look at Eddie Jones, his selections, and he wants his back row to be able to do a certain job. And Simmons is a little bit different to that. So maybe he doesn't slot in with what Eddie Jones needs for his team. He slots in very well for Exeter, but maybe this isn't the kind of player that he wants, you know, at eight for England. And the same for Ireland as well. Like, we have the luxury of choice and being able to select the likes of someone like Connors one day and Van der Veer another. And that's not just in the back rows either. You know, centres were doing really well. And I'll expect a few more. I would expect a few more call-ups with players. The wings is going to be a battle for those positions as well. So it's definitely not doom and gloom. It's a good place to be. I think once Andy Farrell finds a solid foundation for his team, he can definitely slot in and out, depending on who he's playing against and what he wants to get out of the game.
All right, Jenny, great stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Thanks very much.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.